Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello, everyone. So today I've asked someone to join me I thought people would be very interested in hearing from. His name is Michael Shanks, also known as Tim Tim Fed, the man behind The Wizard of Oz, Time Trap, and someone whose work you've probably already seen on the internet, even if you weren't aware that you have seen it. If you are in the extended audio edition of this, I highly suggest you also check out the video version because there are, of course, clips that highlight the things that we are talking about. That is the beauty of a visual medium. But if you are interested in film and special effects and how to get something off the ground, I think you're really going to enjoy this. Specifically, though, we talk a lot about his new short film, Rebooted, which is this incredible story that's a blend of stop motion and live action and motion capture. Also, leave a like. Leave a like. It's important. Don't forget to leave a like. Don't forget. I'm Michael Shanks, by the way. Welcome. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Before we get into it, people should also definitely check out that short. I'll link it below. Go and watch that and then come back to this. It's a bit over 10 minutes. That's right. Is that right? That seems right.
Yeah, I think it's about 12. Yeah. And look, what else are we doing these days?
Exactly. Your channel, though, it's this treasure trove of short films and also insanely complicated jokes in really small packages sometimes. And one of the things that really came to my attention from you a few years ago was the George Lucas version of the Star Wars Force Awakens trailer.
Yeah, that was fun.
And I know that's something that you did like 5 years ago and probably don't think about, but how did you get that turnaround in such a short amount of time? Because that was a huge video and it was like a day and a half and then it was up?
Yeah, it was about that. It was within 48 hours. It was like, so the Force Awakens teaser had come out and, you know, I obviously was excited for it because I'm that guy.
Sure.
And I was watching it. And then that night I had, not to brag, but I had a date with my girlfriend. And
she had
driven around to my mum's house where I lived to pick me up because I didn't and still don't drive. And she'd parked at the front and I was watching the trailer and it had just come out. And I had this idea of like, oh crap, I should make like a version of it, which is like the George Lucas special edition, like covering it with like unnecessary and cheesy special effects that just kind of ruin the whole experience, like George Lucas does.
Sure, yeah.
So I called Louis, and who was literally at the front. I said, hey, I got to stay home and make a sketch. And she's like, cool, fine, whatever. And we're still together now, so that's great.
So your girlfriend's like my wife when you're like, listen, I have to do this really stupid thing that most people don't understand. And she's like, yeah, of course, I know that. I know you. Is that how it works?
Yeah, she just went to see like her other boyfriend.
Okay, right, totally terrific.
Fine. But I realized that, oh man, like, I think this is a funny idea. The whole world is watching this trailer at the moment. Like, yeah. Not to sound too cynical about it, I thought if I can get this out immediately, then it'll really get out there. And so I did. I just turned it around like super quickly. Just I'd become, you know, all the kind of work that I'd done up to that point was lots of quick turnaround, like heavy visual effects-y stuff. So I really knew my way around how like to edit and remix the footage and make it kind of silly and funny. So I just got that done basically in one night and put it on the internet, and it was almost concurrent with the release of the actual trailer and really helped get kind of some eyes on the channel.
Because I guess from that, people went back and watched Time Trap and a bunch of other stuff from your channel, I assume.
Well, yeah, well, actually, so Time Trap is this, just to contextualize that a little bit, was this short film that I made, me and Late Night Films made, and we'd put in a ton of effort into it. It's sort of like a 7-8 minute long short film, but really special effects focused. It's like this, it's like a castaway story, but instead of Tom Hanks on a deserted island, it's an alien on a deserted Earth, and the only way that they can get off is a little time machine.
I can't understand also that how you managed to do that on 6K. Is that right? Is that what you did it for? Added your
own money? Yeah, that was just grand that I had saved up. It was sort of like trying to mash up a really old style of filmmaking, kind of like slapstick silent comedy, with the most modern form of space J.J. Abrams kind of movie. I remember when I was editing it, I had a premiere, I had the timeline of my edit, and I had the timeline of clips from Star Trek Into Darkness. Right. And as I was doing the visual effects, I was just kind of switching between the two and like studying how the camera moved in that shot so I could make my CGI camera move for kind of the fully CG shots, and just really trying to hold them side by side. And obviously it doesn't quite hold up, but on a $6,000 budget of the visual effects done by one person in his mum's basement, it kind of worked. But this was a short film that I put a ton of effort into, and I didn't know when to release it. I was nervous about it because I was like, oh man, I really need people to see this. And this isn't like a lot of other content that I've done, which is, you know, riffing on something that's already in pop culture. This is like a fully unique thing, and I really want to get eyeballs on it.
Yeah.
And it was actually, I released that George Lucas thing, and suddenly the Star Wars trailer, suddenly all these eyes were on my channel. And we weren't actually going to release the video yet, but I thought, crap, we got to put out Time Trap right now. And so within, you know, 12 hours, I called all the producers and said, okay, cool, I'm going to put it up. That's all fine. Great, let's go.
So you were just sitting on it. It was ready to go.
Yeah, and that absolutely wasn't my intention when I made the Star Wars thing, but it suddenly just seemed like, well, I'm never going to get an opportunity like this. And that actually worked out really well. Like, it really got a lot of eyeballs on it. It went up, I think, to the top of videos on Reddit. And actually, it was that video going up that got me representation in the States. It right. Within the week, I was getting, you know, calls from all the people. People told me that it's what they call in Hollywood, the film went around the town.
Okay. I can imagine a guy in a van just kind of throwing it, like delivering yeah. newspapers to people.
Shurikening DVDs out of people.
Yeah.
But it was like 2 days after that, I got a call from the Weinstein Company. And back then, that wasn't really? A bad thing. Yeah, it was like, okay, cool.
I mean, that's a huge deal, obviously. Yeah, I mean, it's still a huge deal, but that's incredible. It also shows how things have changed since then.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. By the way, I don't bring that up to be like, I'm so cool, I got a call from America. But like, working in this industry for a while, like, if I'm ever on like a panel or something, people often ask those questions, like indie filmmakers, like, how do I get rep in the States? And,
yes.
And everybody's story is different. But like, that was my example, was putting a short film out, tethering it to something that was sort of a surefire thing to go viral, and sure enough, it did.
I wanted to ask you also about making something like that, because you didn't do any kind of formal training at university. You didn't go to film school or special effects school, whatever that's called.
No, James, you know so much about me.
I know what I'm doing. You do a lot of your own special effects and music and all of those things. Would you say that's the way to go for everybody, or do you think that's something specific to you?
It certainly worked for me. I think I'm going to get this quote wrong, but I think it was Jerry Seinfeld was talking about how up-and-coming comedians often asked him, like, how did you get noticed? How did you get discovered? And in the 10 years since he was sort of first discovered, the world had changed in stand-up comedy so much that he might as well have been explaining how to succeed as a juggler or as a plumber, because these right. worlds are changing so, so, so quickly. Like, when I started on YouTube, compared to these days, like, there weren't that many YouTubers, so whenever I'm kind of like asked to give advice, the time has rendered every part of my experience completely relevant.
I remember Kevin Smith saying a similar thing, how when somebody gets in one way, that door kind of shuts because then everybody goes for it.
That's it. That probably makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, if you're looking at something like more, what was his first film? Was it More Rats or Clerks?
It was Clerks.
Like, what? That's like a black and white, just him and his friends kind of making wry comedic dialogue. That's so much more easily achieved these days because of digital cameras and how you can just self-distribute. But in those days, the fact that he got film in the camera and got it finished is kind of a miracle in and of itself. That definitely wouldn't raise as many eyebrows as it did today.
So you're saying no film school, basically. That's what you're recommending, or whatever works for you. I don't want to say that, because that's probably not what you were saying at all.
Well, no. Well, my way in was kind of, it was weird, because I was in my final year of high school,
right.
year 12, as we call it down here in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just taken an interest in looking up how to make my own kind of special effects online, just via tutorials, because I had no dating prospects. And it was approaching the end of the year, and I was going a lot on a video game website called The Escapist Magazine, see the aforementioned comment about no dating prospects. And they had a film competition, and they were like, hey, if you can make a short film as like a pilot for a series, the winner will win a contract making that series for us. And I'd never made a film before, but I was like a theater kid, and I was like, oh, I reckon I could do this.
You'd seen film, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I'd watched the Shrek bonus features. Well, actually, no, I'd watched all the Lord of the Rings special features like so many times over. So I was really kind of into that world.
Well, I've heard a lot of people say that that's their film school, right? Because I've also watched those, yeah. Not that I'm anywhere incredible. Near the level that you are, but they're so insightful.
Yeah, amazing. And just like inspiring. Even if like for what they teach you is one thing, but what they inspire you to want to learn is totally something else.
Effects like that also, results like that even, they're very achievable now as well with what people can just do at home.
Yeah, amazing. And The Lord of the Rings, I grew up in New Zealand and it was just such a big thing when that was being produced. I was like the right age for that, where it was like the news every night would be like, coming up, we've got the weather, the sport, and then what's happening with Lord of the Rings?
Right, okay.
It was wild. Yeah, so I was in year 12 and I made this film as an entry to this Escapist magazine competition, and it won the competition. And so I was 17 and I suddenly had this contract saying, make this action comedy show, because that's what the pilot was, and every 2 weeks you've got to release an episode. And yeah, so from that I had to make this 25-part action comedy show on The Escapist. And you know, we're talking about the kind of the film school thing. I think of that as my film school because I didn't know anybody in the industry. I just had to, it was that year post high school, so I was like, so many of my friends don't have jobs. Like, you're going to come act in it. You're going to hold the camera. You're going to do that. And through that, there were a couple of friends that kind of consistently would be helping out. But otherwise, I had no option but to learn how to edit, learn how to shoot, learn how to, you know, compose the music, do the sound design, etc. So I was really in the deep end. And that worked great for me because I have the sort of mind where I can obsess over things like that. But for other people, that wouldn't work at all. And I certainly missed out on lots of experiences by not going to film school. Like,
you got a girlfriend, it's fine. What else do you need?
Yeah, exactly. And what a girlfriend. by which I mean she's cool, because she is.
Yeah, absolutely. So have any of those people come along with you?
No, none of them pursued film or acting or anything like that, except for my friend Nicholas Issel, who we wrote that series, The Wizards of Oz, together.
Oh, that's right. You did. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, he's a great writer and still pursuing that. And yeah, he was in almost every episode of Doomsday Arcade, which was the name of the show on The Escapist. I beg you all to not look it up.
Well, I certainly won't put any clips of it in this video. Don't you even worry about it. So I wanted to, that kind of brings me around to your new project. I read at one point you decided not to make it a silent project. It had a lot of kind of witty dialogue, and you said it didn't kind of really flow, and it was, I don't know if you used the word cringe, but that's the kind of sense that I got from reading some of your interviews about it. Is that incorrect, the way you started things off?
No, that's absolutely right. So this is the new short film, Rebooted, which ended up being a silent film. But there were so many drafts of the script where it wasn't. It was very dialogue heavy and always the same premise and the same characters. But at one point, it all took place at a funeral. At one point, the main character was a living exhibit in a museum. Wow. And it was it kept changing. And all the time I was putting in dialogue, I just realized it became very sitcom-y. I was like writing jokes. Therefore, it really became verbose, and I wanted something to be kind of concise and to the point. And instead, I was constantly having to write in setups for punchlines, etc., etc. It was odd because a lot of the work that I've done online, and you can see on the YouTube channel TimTimFed, actually has no dialogue in it. And one of the great things about that is it allows it to kind of travel, and that people from all over the world can actually watch that content and relate to it without needing subtitles or replace dialogue, etc. Yeah.
Everyone understands a man, you know, playing tennis with a tank, you know what I mean? That's universal.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully. But but there wasn't really a reason I was avoiding dialogue in the past, other than I just love visual storytelling, and that's very much kind of my directorial style. I was always trying to ape kind of Pixar films and Edgar Wright films and silent films, that sort of thing.
Right.
And I don't know why, it actually took my friend Laura, who's a playwriter, to be reading. She was reading my draft of Rebooted and just kind of said, why isn't this silent? Your work's like, you know, always silent. And it kind of opened this world up to me, and I stripped all the dialogue out, and I think it was the best creative decision I made on this project, because, or rather Laura made by suggesting it. It really endears you to the character. It makes you, I think, much more empathetic to this sort of world. And there was no need to have these kind of creatures speak. I love the challenge of working without dialogue.
What was it, something like you had 16 kind of faces you could put on the skeleton? Is that the idea? And you got so much emotion out of that.
Yeah, well, that's really on the animator Samuel Lewis, who gave him so much emotion with, as you said, 13 facial expressions. All we could change were his eyebrows, and he had 13 different sets of eyebrows. Yeah, he really came to life. Sam was incredible.
And because this is such a special effects heavy project, that must have been really challenging, because I know The Wizards of Oz starts off in this huge epic kind of medieval fantasy setting, and then you shift things to Melbourne, and I understand that was somewhat budget related also, because you can kind of tone things down a little bit at points. But this is all, he's in almost every shot, right, with this new one?
Yeah, basically every single shot. Yeah, it was a huge project to pull together, and massive kudos to my producers at Late Night Films for making it all work from a budgetary point of view. But I mean, like, everything I've ever done has always been really special effects heavy. Partially that's because I just love genre stuff, and partially, stupidly, it's because I love doing special effects. Like, I love just like kind of sitting on my computer and sort of, I kind of think of doing like comps as sort of like playing a puzzle video game. It's really stupid, but you have a set of tools and you know where you need to end up, and it's like, how do I use these tools to get to that destination? It's like a super nerdy Portal level. Well, to give the kind of synopsis of it, the quick pitch,
I probably should have done all of this up top.
Oh, no stress. Now I'm going to PR mode and I can go. Rebooted tells the story of Phil, a stop-motion animated skeleton from Hollywood's golden era who can no longer find work in modern Hollywood due to being an out-of-date visual effect.
Was that off the top of your head then?
That was, but I've done that a lot.
Incredible.
Oh, man. I remember doing the PR for Wizards. It was just, I became like an automaton, just reciting the same things over and over again.
I always feel bad for those celebrities in interviews and directors where they sit in a chair and they've clearly just been there 3 days straight. And people come in and go, what was it like to work with whoever? And what was it like living in wherever?
Oh, so great. Yeah, they're fantastic. They never say, you know what, he fucking sucks. Yeah, he was like the worst dude.
What I was also really interested in about this project is I can't imagine there was a lot of wiggle room to cut things, or it would have been difficult to, because they were so special effects heavy. Was it something like 6 months of stop motion to get everything going? How hard was it to trim down a scene to be like, oh, that doesn't quite flow if I cut it here? Maybe you're cutting off 10 seconds, but then that's weeks of work.
The way that I direct, which is the same of some other directors and different to others, is that, wow, what a profound statement, Michael, is that I know a lot of directors who kind of will storyboard, or maybe they won't storyboard, but if they do, they'll just kind of go, okay, close up of him, close up of her, wide shot, cool, and we'll get the coverage. I really fastidiously storyboard everything before I shoot it, to the point where every single one of my projects, you can kind of, I've got like a almost like crappy comic book of the whole thing.
Yeah, right.
Even if we're going back to a shot from two shots ago that we've already seen, I'll redraw the board, because I really want to look at it all and realize that visually it stays interesting and fresh. I really dislike the idea of coverage, which essentially means like you get everybody in a close-up, you get a wide, and then you kind of make the film in the edit. Like, I really want to edit the film before we actually get on set. So when it comes to kind of cutting and trimming, I really don't cut and trim very much at all, because I've already done that work in the storyboard. And when it comes to the animation side of things, because our main character is stop-motion animated despite it being a live-action film, and stop-motion animation is so difficult and so time-consuming, and we had such little budget, we couldn't afford to pay our animator for a day longer than we needed.
Right, okay, yeah.
So the way we did that was we shot every shot in the film at least twice. And in one of those takes, I performed as the skeleton character.
Yes.
But what that allowed us to do is, before we even started the animation, we had a full edit of the movie from A to B, from front to back, from start to finish. I'm going to keep saying that, of me performing, so we could make all the trims there, so we never animated anything we weren't going to use. Because it would have been heartbreaking to animate an amazing piece of animation and then go, actually, that scene doesn't work, cut it, and then it descends out nowhere. So we just did the whole thing with me, and then gradually, shot by shot, I was replaced by a skeleton. And it was kind of like watching a time lapse of my eventual fate in real time. It was great.
I couldn't believe some of the stop motion stuff.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Stuff that you did, including when the skeleton melts. You animated it two different times, and one of them was with different lighting exposures, so you got that kind of effect. I mean, things like that, where does that come from? Is that you, or is that your animator? How did that come up?
That was sort of Sam's idea. Well, our animation team was actually two people. We had Samuel Lewis, who was our stop motion animator, and we had Gerald Thompson, who was our stop motion cinematographer.
Right.
And what we had at that time is our somebody from Late Night Films, Kevin Look, was taking all this data and measuring the distance between the light and where I was standing and the light and the camera and the angle that the camera was pointed at and all this technical data and all these photos. So then when we came to animation, our stop motion cinematographer, Gerald Thompson, would rebuild basically the lighting setups, but in miniature. So if we had a light here, here, and here up in our big shoot, he'd put lights here, here, and here on our kind of teeny tiny little shoot.
I saw that spreadsheet where that was all mapped out on, and that's an incredibly laborious process, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah.
The result, I mean, it just looks in camera. I mean, I think if you didn't know, you'd just assume that it was just a very good-looking CGI skeleton.
Yeah, and that's so great to hear. Like, thank you. Like, and I can't take any credit for it. Like, it's all Gerald and Sam. They did an astonishing job. And well, going back to that skeleton, the melting shot. Yeah, we have a scene where Phil melts, and so the silicon of his puppet melts off his metal armature frame.
Yeah.
And then that was you know, something in the script, and I storyboarded it up as I thought, oh, that's a really cool idea. I don't know how we're going to do it. And we actually thought, Sam thought he would build a meltable version of him and would use a heat gun and sort of like Indiana Jones face it.
Oh, right. So
it
kind of goes, yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. And there's one shot where we actually did that. There's a shot right just preceding that shot where it's a close-up of his hand and his hand.
Yes, yeah.
Normally on the Phil puppet, the hand's like, I don't know, a couple of centimeters big, but Sam built a sort of 20-centimeter long hand that was out of a meltable plasticine.
Oh, right, okay.
And he used a heat gun to blah, 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 blah.
So that's how you managed to get the detail on that. I guess that would be incredibly hard to film on such a tiny hand, I guess, yeah.
It was just fumes aplenty in our very unventilated office, and Sam was like, maybe gonna die.
But let's reassess this, yeah. I wanted to ask you about relinquishing control on something like this, because I know with Wizards of Oz, you're in it, you're doing the special effects, you're doing the music, you know, you're storyboarding it all. I also notice how your storyboards kind of, they start really magnificent, and then by then you just like stick people or whatever, which is incredible to me. The detail you put into those is phenomenal. How hard is it to relinquish control, or is it nice to have a team like that where you can go, I'm not good at stop motion animation like they are? Is it nice to be able to go, can you do a better version of this?
Yeah, but that was amazing. We had early on discussions of like, oh, could I just learn how to do stop motion animation? Just literally animate over my performance, and using that, I'll just become really good at it. And every animator I spoke to was like, "You're an idiot. That's never going to work." And they were right.
You'll be doing it for the rest of your life, basically. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and then the results will be very bad. But relinquishing control is I'll gladly fess up as actually like a big problem I have when it comes to working, particularly when like moving on to direct some stuff. You know, it's more like traditional, like working on like a network show or something like that, that when I've done little bits and bobs of that, because I'm so used to the indie guerrilla realm, because all I never, that's actually something you lose from film school. You're really ready to be part of it. You're taught to be part of a team and to lean on other people. But the way I came up was, if I don't do it, it doesn't get done.
Yeah.
And so I struggle with that. Like something like stop motion animation, I was never going to do that well. So giving that up to Sam, yeah, absolutely fine. But I compose all my own scores, and there's definitely other composers out there that would do a better job than me. But because I can also kind of do it, I'm like, well, I'll just do it then because I don't trust them. But that's a terrible skill, because, you know, part of directing is delegating and being able to communicate to people what your vision is and having trust in their ability to interpret it.
Absolutely.
And what they usually do is better than what you can do. And they come up with ideas. Like, everybody on set is an incredibly creative person. And you should always, I mean, here's my take, is you should always be really open to listening to every person on the crew. because they'll have often better ideas than you.
I mean, I guess it's so important to build that kind of essential team around you, because the team of editors that I work with, they're all great and they're all better editors than me. And that's kind of the idea, that you want somebody for me who can not only complement what I do, but enhance it to make it, you know, much better than anything I could ever produce. But also, I used to be a primary school teacher before I do whatever the fuck this is. And I also found working in teams, when you're working with people who you think, I could probably do a better job of this, or at least a job, you feel yourself kind of taking it on to kind of lessen the burden of other people as well, which is probably not a good idea, I'd imagine.
Well, yeah. And also, like, when you really enjoy doing every aspect of it, then it's just like, oh, you're taking my fun away. I love right, composing. Yeah. Why do you get to do that? That's no fun.
Is that why you're like, look, I'm going to be Phil. I'm going to be Phil on set.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Well, and also then, like, with something like that, we very, very rarely have enough budget for what we're trying to do. So we're always kind of fighting against the small budgets that we have. And that usually comes down to time on set. The more time on set, exponentially, the more money you're going to spend. And the idea of just having to communicate what I want to do to an actor whose performance is only going to be covered by an animation is just like, well, that's just going to slow us down. So I'll just do it. And then I don't need to check, you know, then as an actor, I don't need to check with the director if they're happy. And as a director, I don't need to mold the actor's performance to where I'm happy, because I can just be unhappy with my performance and live with that because it's my fault.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's also the same with when you're doing things like music. You can also tweak it on the fly. You're like, I'm not really happy with this. Instead of, you know, you ringing around and you kind of sit down with the person and explain it, you can just be like, I'll just tweak this just now. It'll take like 5 minutes, as opposed to doing this whole thing.
I think I worked on a little thing earlier in the year. It's kind of, I guess you'd call it like a pilot for Princess Pictures. And we worked with another composer on it, a guy named Brendan Caulfield. And he was so amazing. He like completely nailed the vibe I was hoping for and made it way better than I would have done. But then I realized that in my feedback to him, I was so like desperately trying to be like, you know, I know how to play music too. And my notes were like so didactic and just so douchey, you know, like an insecure kid trying to be like, yo, beer? Yeah, I love beer. It's so cool.
I think that's very endearing. I bet he was very impressed. I'm sure he didn't interpret it that way at all.
He's such a nice man. I'm sure he probably was, but I would have been in his shoes like, what a douchebag. Shut up, let me do my job.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. Just to kind of wrap things up, I wanted to ask you a bit about funding, because you've mentioned that a lot of these projects are relatively low budget, starting with Time Trap, obviously, but then going through Screen Australia, you're afforded a bit more of a budget, which you can kind of expand things out in a little. How do you go about kind of getting money for these projects in general?
In a nutshell, I mean, I've been really fortunate to have a couple of things funded from Screen Australia. But the first thing I got funded from Screen Australia was Wizards of Oz. And the way that actually came about was Screen Australia approached me, which was amazing. I'd released Time Trap and a bunch of stuff online, and Screen Australia actually just kind of got in touch and said, hey, we've seen your work. We think you'd be a good candidate to get some sort of web series funding if you want to come in and talk. And I came in and talked with them, and they said, do you have any ideas? And I sort of had this wizard show, this kind of wizard comedy in mind. And from that, I contacted Nick Issel and said, hey, do you want to write the show together? And so we did that, and we were fortunate enough to get funding. But even from that point, when we submitted the scripts, or even just the ideas, I said, you can't do this for this budget. Like, the most amount of money that we're funding at that point was $350,000 Australian. So right. For any non-Australian listeners, that's like $5 American. Yes. I know that's like $280 American, I'd say. But I was like, that's the most money anybody's ever had. Look at Time Trap. We made that for $6,000 and it looks great. However, here's the issue. When nobody's getting paid, you don't have to pay anybody because there's no money and nobody's getting paid. But as soon as you get the budget from the government, you have to pay, and thankfully you have to pay, so nobody's getting exploited, everybody union rates, which is obviously fantastic. But suddenly, you know, our cast in Wizards is over 40 people, and just that alone was like almost the budget. Like, we were like, oh crap, what are we going to do?
My understanding is that you didn't take any money for that in the end. Was that the idea?
Yeah, so I directed the show. I edited and did the visual effects with my producer, Chris, and I co-wrote the show, and I was the lead actor in the show, and I composed all the music. And I took, I think I took my writer's fee and burnt the rest. because the only people that we were allowed to not pay were essentially the people in charge. So it was me and Chris Hocking, the producer of the show. We did the visual effects together. We did 36 weeks of unpaid full-time visual effects work on it. So I actually moved back into my mum's house. And
I was about to say, how do you fund something like that? How do you live? I guess you didn't pay rent at that time. I guess that's the answer to that, I guess.
Yeah, it's totally untenable. Unless you're, you know, as fortunate as I was to have like a mum with a spare room who was like happy to be annoyed by me for basically a year. And I didn't take any weekends off. Like it was honestly intense. Actually, no, that's true. I took off one weekend for my brother's wedding and then half a weekend for my sister's wedding because it was second. So I was like, I'm over weddings.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that's how that works. What does she want, really?
No offense, Kerry. So that's kind of how that funding thing worked. Well, I suppose to talk broadly about funding, we actually chatted about this a little bit before we started rolling, but I have started doing some assessment for Screen Australia, and the way that some of the online funding works, at least, I'm not sure about some of the other stuff. They get so many submissions that they have external assessors, which are people they've worked with before and that they know, kind of understand both the creative and the producerial roles of funding. And they get two external assessors to assess a project, as well as somebody in-house at Screen Australia to assess the same project. And they kind of, you know, capitulate those results to figure out whether or not to fund it or not. And it's fascinating being on the other side of it. And the main criteria that I'm sort of concerned with is that when I'm looking at it, like, I just want an interesting idea. I want to see something that I've never seen before. You read a lot of applications that are largely dealing with really similar premises and really similar settings.
What does that come down to? A lot of stuff set in an apartment and there's a shot from inside a fridge when somebody opens their fridge. Is it that kind of stuff? What are we?
Yeah. If I get a housemate comedy, I'm not against it, but I'm like, I want to know why this is better than the other nine housemate
comedies
that I've received.
I was going to say, it better be the best comedy in the world. You're looking for something else, something unusual, a bit left of center, I guess. Or you in particular, because there's obviously other people that are involved.
I suppose everybody brings a little bias to them, and I absolutely try not to, but everybody brings a bias to everything. And I suppose maybe my bias is I'm looking for, I do enjoy, you know, genre content, and I enjoy stuff that really makes me go, oh, that's weird. But also it comes down to sometimes you get work just submitted by people who have a great track record, and that's one of the other criteria. But you don't have to have had a great track record before if the idea is really good. So I actually think like putting together a submission is not as much paperwork as it might seem. So it's not really that scary. And Screen Australia has money and they have to give it to somebody. and you know, they really want to. So if any assessor gets a project that they really think is interesting and great, like, yeah, we'll be like, absolutely, let's try our best to make this happen.
My understanding is it's a very positive environment and they are there to help you along the way. They're not trying to kind of step on your dreams and kind of mush it into something that it isn't.
No, absolutely. I mean, from what I understand, like, if Screen Australia doesn't give away money, they're not doing their job. Like, they sort of have to.
Well, speaking of development, I guess we'll end on this. And I feel like this is kind of a difficult question to ask a person, especially when you've just wrapped up this massive project. What do you do next? Do you take a break, or are you straight into the next thing? There's obviously a bit of a forced break at the moment, but are your wheels kind of turning on the next project? What's the idea there?
Well, obviously, Rebooted, the short film's just released, and that's actually the first piece of YouTube content I've put up in over 3 years. Which is something
is
I used to do a lot more. That's true, yeah.
Oh, so I've got that up. Yeah, it is too. I didn't even realize that, yeah.
That's because, like, I always wanted to kind of work longer for me stuff. I never wanted to be sort of a YouTube-y guy. And this might seem kind of weird, but after Wizards, I kind of thought, well, I think I'm kind of done with YouTube. Like, I sort of did everything I wanted to do on this platform.
Yeah.
Like, I've had way more success on it than I ever thought would happen. And I'm like, cool, now I want to move into kind of some other stuff. But then Rebooted kind of came up and I thought, oh, okay, cool, I love this idea. I want to make sure it gets... And the strand of funding was online.
Yes.
The short film was actually funded by Screen Australia and YouTube as part of a Skip Ahead initiative. So it was YouTube-based. So now I have a lot of work that I never released because I did some for a comedy channel show and some sketches that I've sort of been sitting on because they're not that good. But now that I've released Rebooted, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll just like release a bunch of old work. But moving ahead, it's really hopefully to move on into the feature space. I'm writing a feature film for a studio at the moment, and there's a couple of others that have been written, and we're just, you know, like every asshole in the industry, like, yeah, we're just kind of figuring out funding. But yeah, figuring out funding and hopefully that can go somewhere. There's a fun little horror film and a fun little thing. Yeah.
Are those international?
Yeah, international. Yeah. Yeah, that's the vibe.
that mean you'll be moving over to LA at some point, I'd imagine, or doing that kind of thing?
Hopefully not. It's been suggested, but just honestly, I like love living where I live. Not to brag, I just have a great group of friends and a family, and I like being here. I like the idea of going over for projects and stuff. But for example, there's a film that I've written that's like a horror film, and I wrote it being kind of local. But you know, the sort of producers that we've got at the moment are like, if the leads aren't Australian, we can raise more money for it.
Right, so okay, yeah.
It's that kind of a thing where we're like, oh, okay, well, if we attach American cast, we could still shoot it over here because there's tax incentives. This sounds really cynical, but it's like, oh, there's tax incentives to shoot stuff over here. But
I mean, you look at, like, The Invisible Man, you look at, like, Thor Ragnarok and those kinds of things, it's not uncommon. It happens all the time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the Invisible Man's actually, like, there's no reason that film couldn't have been Australian, except for the fact that it never would have gotten the financing that it got from overseas in order to exist if it was starring David Wenham and... I don't want to sully an actress's name by...
Look, you've already sullied David Wenham, I think that...
No, but I love David Wenham.
I know, me too, yeah.
But how amazing, though, that that film can come out and be the number one film in the world, and it was shot in Sydney, made by an Australian crew, Australian writer and director. Like, that's the sort of shit that I think is awesome. And if we can't raise those budgets with Australian-accented casts, because you can still do with kind of Australian casts doing other accents, well, then, you know, let's keep chipping away at that until we can get to the place where we're not embarrassed by our film releases.
I think it's also what was I going to say? Sorry, long day.
A long day, long life.
I know, right? It's going forever. Oh, that's right. I think also a lot of studios seem to be missing the idea that you can make a movie for $10-20 million and it can make 60, and that's more than enough for what you're doing. Not everything needs to be $150 million. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm chasing 4.6. If anyone wants to give me 4.6 million, I'll make you a damn good movie.
That's not a bad idea. All right, I think that's pretty much everything. But you are Tim Fed on all platforms. Is that the idea?
Yes, that's correct.
So, look, obviously, people probably would have already checked out the short when I said up top. Definitely go and check it out. But if you haven't, please do. And just go through the YouTube channel, because there is a bunch of just hilarious and strange stuff just hiding away in there that I just think people will really, really enjoy. And like you said, it's kind of translates universally. So I think there's anything you click on, I think you're in for a pretty, pretty good time, I reckon.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, James, for having me. It's been fun.
Anytime. Sorry, that sounded mean. Anytime.
No, that's fine. We've got nothing else to do, right? You know, we could play some online games or something.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, okay, let's do it. Ooh, Minesweeper, here we go.
All right, cheers, mate.
All right, thanks, mate, cheers.
Thanks, everyone, for watching and or listening to this. Don't forget, there is the video edition, which is linked below. And just stay safe and just be cool. Just be as cool as you can. Just like Michael Shanks. All right, see you later.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.